So my name is Susan, and I'm 74 years old. Today is June 1st, 2023. I'm in Glen Allen, Virginia, and I'm here with my one small step partner, Lisa.
Nice. My name is Lisa. I am 46 years old. Today is June 1st, 2023. I'm in Mechanicsville, Virginia, and I'm here with my one step partner, Susan.
All right. So this is your bio, Lisa. I'm a conservative 47 year old, although
47.
There's some discrepancy there.
I am 47.
Okay. 47 year old Christian mom of four children, ages 28, 23, 19, and 9. I come from a family of musicians, music teachers, singers, and songwriters. I love learning of any kind. I love nature, camping, hiking, river floating, anything outside, but especially the mountains. I'm an accountant and enjoy puzzles and problem solving. I lead a recovery group at church called North Star, and I'm very passionate about loving people and helping others learn to love themselves and others better.
All right, Susan, your bio. I'm a Christian woman, retired. I moved here 10 years ago to be close to my grandkids. I love to garden and I'm a master naturalist volunteer. I also read a lot. I have two living children. One died a few years ago. I also have four stepchildren.
So why did you want to participate in One Small Step?
I think it's super important for people to talk, and there seems to be a lot of tension right now in the world among people who have different views. And so I just saw it and I thought it was a great project to get people talking and get to know one another, because I absolutely agree with the premise that it said that we have more in common than we think we do, which is our humanity. And so I just wanted to be a part of that. Yeah. So why did you want to participate in One Small Step?
Very similar reasons. I have realized that in my circle of friends, in my Sunday school class, that we are of very like mind. Mm-hmm. And my opportunities to listen to another person who has a totally different point of view than I do are pretty limited. And there was another piece, I think, that appealed to me about this was, this feels like a safe place to do that. I have had conversations with someone who disagreed with me or saw life totally differently than I did, and they did not end well. And so I like the fact that this is, there are ground rules and there's edges and understandings about how we're going to talk and how we're going to listen. So I like that part a lot. Yes. And I think we desperately need it in our divided culture that seems to be more and more divided.
Yes.
So I'm curious about your life growing up. And you talked about singers and songwriters and musical people, and I would love to hear more about what was your life like growing up.
Yeah. So I was born in Charlottesville, Virginia. My family, I was born into sort of a group of, I think looking back, it was probably a cult, or could be sort of considered a cult, but it was a group of Christians that called themselves the Assembly. And I believe they started in California, moved to Texas, then they settled here in Virginia. It's sort of like a Mennonite sort of group. The women didn't cut their hair or wear makeup or wear pants or anything like that. And so it was a group in Charlottesville, and most people intermarried. So most all of my family and friends and all that, until maybe early elementary school, were in this group, but they were very musical. It was a big part of the group was music as well. But my grandma and my grandpa were both piano teachers and piano tuners and violin teachers. And my father was an opera singer. And my mom plays multiple instruments. So we all played an instrument. We all sang. We all did that kind of thing. It was just sort of, you know, part of our life in general. So that was that. And the group was a bit rough, and they were very legalistic. My parents got divorced when I was about 4, and my mom kind of got out of there and moved to Richmond. So I have a younger sister and 2 older brothers. And then it was kind of like a struggle from that point on until adulthood for me. We had a very rough childhood, very, very chaotic. My mom had mental health issues, and but we had music and we had nature. She was always dragging us to the mountains or to the river or hiking. She really, it was a huge part of our childhood. It was nature and music. So we were very poor, but we had a lot of fun. So what was your like?
Well, there's so many things you've said that I would prefer to talk to you about than our beliefs, you know, the mountains and nature and those things that continue to hold my life.
Yes.
My father was in the army. And so we moved around a good bit when I was a child. I was born in Virginia Beach, but I moved when I was 6 weeks old. So I don't remember a lot about that experience. I moved to Panama for 3 years and then lived in Florida and South Carolina and Maryland and Colorado, and then moved to Charlotte, North Carolina, where I went to high school. So that was my path. I have 3 older brothers. I have 2 older brothers at this point. One of my brothers died quite a few years ago. But that was, I grew up in this family where I was the youngest and the only girl, and you know, all those things have their own dynamics to them. So I came to, I moved to Richmond first in 1971. I taught school at what was Mosby Middle School for a year. And then I became a school librarian. And then I moved to the mountains for several years and went to graduate school and got a master's in conflict resolution. All this is more than you want to know, but
Then
I was a mediator, facilitator, trainer in conflict, helping people deal with conflict. And moved down here, as my bio said, when my grandchildren moved here. I moved. My husband and I followed them, and he died in 2020. So
I'm sorry.
Yeah. You know, life is what happens along the way. So this is a really interesting question. I'm looking at the chat questions. What people or events have most influenced your political beliefs?
What people or events have most influenced your political beliefs? I have 2 follow-up questions too after this for you on your thing. That's an interesting question. I have always been, since I was a child, very headstrong, very argumentative, very opinionated. On the Myers-Briggs, I'm an ENTP, which is the debater.
Okay.
So I'm very, you know, I just have always been like that. So I've always had strong beliefs about things since I was little. It's hard to pinpoint who or where I got some of those beliefs. For instance, this is just a for instance, and we don't have to get into this, but just, you know, in our culture, I remember arguing with a man in my mom's singles group when I was in like fifth grade about abortion. And, you know, I was super anti-abortion. And I just remember having these really strong viewpoints, like, how can you, you know, so maybe my grandmother, on my mom's side, she was wise and steady and loving and a Christian. You know, in my adulthood, I mean, I've leaned towards pretty like libertarian or like conservative people, like I really liked Robbie Zacharias. I don't know if you know who that is, but thinkers, philosophy, you know, kind of like apologetics and thinkers and that type of thing. Probably, I'm sorry it took me so long to answer that, but I was trying to think.
You're thinking.
Yeah, that would probably be the people that influenced me were thinker type people that really dug into the sort of meaty philosophical, you know, I need to have like deep understanding and it needs to make sense and logical and analytical and all that kind of stuff. So and then at the same time, my daughter, my 28-year-old, she, it's kind of a long story, but she has shaped some of my political and beliefs as well. She is gay and she's married, and she went through all kinds of phases that were not things that I thought that I would deal with as my conservative Christian mom. And so I have learned a lot from her, and I sort of don't fit in the box as a lot of people would think I would as a conservative Christian mom. So yeah, I'm sorry that took so long if it did, but how about you?
It was really, I didn't think it was long at all.
Okay.
Well, my parents were fairly conservative. And so I've tried to sort of understand or unpack my own journey. And probably some piece of this is that I grew up in the 60s, you know, in the middle of the civil rights challenges and questions. My parents were quite Southern and quite racist. And as an Army child, I was going to school with Black children, and you know, there was a African American, a Black librarian on the base, and I was seeing these pictures that just didn't line up with what my parents were saying. You know, these are not the people that I know, the people that they thought of, or and so they had a lot of views like that about really any group of people that was not them. Catholics and Jews and whoever the other were, they were pretty closed off to the idea of others. And so I think that my exposure to others kind of opened up my thinking. And then we had the civil rights movement. Gandhi was pretty influential to me, with me, and Martin Luther King. And I doubt that you have heard of Walter Wenck, but he is very nonviolence committed and very a strong Christian in terms of following this path of nonviolence and what Jesus lived. So those are probably three people that were very influential to me. And it was a matter of reading and thinking and reading and thinking. And so, you know, this is one of those things that fascinates me, is that two people, you and me, can have things in common, but have come to and read possibly the same things sometimes, like the Bible, for instance, and come to very different views, and yet can hold up, well, this is what this says, and this is what it means. Can't you see that? It really sort of puzzles me that we can do that. Several years ago, a friend of mine, it was during a political turmoil time of mine, and he wrote at the bottom of his email, "Are you doing good and resisting evil?" And it was actually about the Iraq war, because I did not think we should go to war in Iraq. And I read this message, "Are you doing good and resisting evil?" And I thought, yes, absolutely, that's what I'm doing. And I realized that the people who disagreed with me would read that same sentence and say, yes, absolutely, that's what I'm doing. I'm doing good and resisting evil. And yet we're so,
I too am fascinated by that. And what, as you said, I hope it's okay for me to go ahead and talk, please. But please. As you're speaking about your reading and who, C.S. Lewis is somebody who influenced me tremendously, and G.K. Chesterton, who I really, really, really like a lot of his writings. But I have been fascinated by that as well, because I've always had friends of all different types. I think it's because I can talk to people and I don't take things personally, that I can be friends with some people that have very, very different views from me. But I have found it fascinating as well. And I've heard people say, well, the Bible says, just read your Bible. And I'm like, do you know how many sects of religions have taken that book and interpreted it in what I might find ridiculous ways, in so many different ways? It's been used to control people and hurt people and demoralize people. It's been used for good as well. But I mean, any one of us interpreting those things, and we talk about truth, truth seems to be up for discussion as well these days. So I saw a podcast with this guy named Dr. Z during the quarantine and lockdown, and he had a podcast about moral palettes that I found really helpful. And it talked about, we all have moral palettes, and I think it has a lot to do with this, sort of like the Myers-Briggs, sort of like what drives us. And some of us, the most important thing is freedom. Some of us, the most important thing is safety. Some of us, the most important thing is justice. You know, some of us, the most important thing is harm to no one, you know, and within those palettes, some of those things get completely disregarded for the thing that's the most important. And then we find each other atrocious because of that, because our number one thing may be stomped on because of what their number one thing is. And I found that helpful. My question that I was going to ask you, if you don't mind me asking you, is how do you think living in Panama shaped your views?
I was 3 years old when we left.
Okay.
Although probably while we were there, and I had, there was a live-in nanny maid person. And she was from Colombia, and she was quite Black. And my mother has told me she's primarily who took care of me. And
the help.
Yeah, absolutely. And my mother quoted that she said one time to my mother, "She's all the fun I needs," which was kind of cool. But so we were pretty tight, I think. But I was 3 when I left. So I think that was an imprinting thing here that made a difference in terms of that aspect of my anti-racist kind of views.
I can imagine that having parents that were racist would definitely cause one to go a certain way and fight a certain way. Luckily, none of my family was racist at all. Quite the opposite. So thankfully, I feel like I would have been like you though. I feel like sometimes if I had been born in the 60s, just watching the movie, The Help, I didn't read the book, but I saw the movie. It made me so angry that I was like, it made me almost hate white people for a little while. And I was like, how is this possible? How is it possible that this stuff happened? You know, and I think I probably would have been a troublemaker back then had I, but I didn't live through that. And when I watched that movie, it was hard for me to really understand that that happened. So I can see how people who didn't go through it don't understand. Yeah. You can go ahead if you.
Well, I appreciate what you've said, because I'm certain that that was, I've read the book, I didn't see the movie, and it was appalling and grievous.
Yes. So, I don't understand how it happened, how it happens. I don't.
Okay. We'll talk about that another time, because it was built up over generations, the attitude and what my parents grew up in. It was the culture that they grew up in. So when you think about your political beliefs, what has been most influential? Oh, you talked about people you've read. And then there's this next question that's a political figure you've admired in your lifetime.
A political figure that I've admired in my lifetime. I haven't admired a whole lot of political figures. In my younger days, I don't think I really paid attention. I had so much going on raising children and
we
getting
were
through
both
life.
Mothers, I have looked at your ages, and I was a pretty young. My mother was born when I was 20.
Yeah, I was 18, and then I got divorced and was a single mom for a while, and then got remarried. So it was, and then that was still a struggle. But so I didn't really pay attention much. But in my years now, I really like people who are brave and brave and logical. So somebody like Rand Paul is somebody I like, or somebody people that are just fearless. I even like fearless on the other side, even honestly. I respect somebody who doesn't back down. You know, in the past, political figures that were thinkers and that were brave. I think that just in general. And then I can't stand hyperbole. So political figures who sort of are that way, I don't like. But just trying to think about somebody I admire. I don't know how to answer that. So how about you? What political figures have you admired in your lifetime? And you going through the civil rights movement, I'm sure you have a much more personal connection to.
Well, I deeply admire Jimmy Carter because he is a person who, watching him, listening to him, has lived his beliefs.
Yes.
Has really, in times that were not popular, but he has said, this is what I believe and this is how I will live. And I really appreciate that. I really admire Obama because I listen to his speeches and to me, it's clear that he's done some deep thinking about what it is he's saying. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that.
I can see how, especially Jimmy Carter. I don't know much about Jimmy Carter. And of course, in the conservative family that I grew up in, it was just that Jimmy Carter was terrible president, you know. But in the latter years, I've seen him, even as an old person, working and serving and just super kind. And so that's really important. And I can see how a lot of people admire him for that. I like when I admire somebody, it's much more of a fighter. You know, again, I think it's my moral palate. You know, I like a good brave fighter. And people fight in different ways, though. It's definitely something that I have come to understand, that you know, fights are not always about brawn and loud and okay. So yeah.
There is an area that I kind of want to ask you about, but I kind of don't.
We'll do it.
Okay. And that is, it's about abortion.
Yeah.
Because I believe, this was me thinking about you, having never met you, that probably is the place where we most diverge.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a place where a lot of people have super strong. Yeah. Well, ask me, do you want to ask me something specific about it, or do you want me to tell you how I...
So I'm kind of working on this because in a way I just want to tell you what I think. But
sure, tell me. No, please.
Can I just, before you start talking about this, can I really suggest that as you move through your thoughts about this, to really try to ground them in where those beliefs come from. So less about what the opinion is and more about, you know, what are your life experiences that shape that opinion? I think that'll be more fruitful than just sharing the opinion itself.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So on one level, I am pro-life. Mm-hmm. And I have three children. Have three children.
Yes.
And they didn't come along in any planned way. Every one of them was a surprise. And every one of them was a decision. And I knew that this was a life I would carry, and that it was right for me to carry this life, even though the timing was not my financial situation. There were so many things that would say, and my concern is that I made that decision me, and that I don't feel like I can make that decision for everybody. And it's just so complicated that and complex. And I can look at friends that I have known. There is a woman I know who has five children. I may have missed one. She had five children and she was using protection and struggling, absolutely struggling financially and in every other way, and really trying to get her feet on the ground so that she could be there for her family. She's a single mother, and she did have protected sex, but she got pregnant anyway, and she now has six children. And all six of them and her are really suffering now, really struggling, really on the edge of homelessness. And I didn't have any conversation with her, you know, about this, but it really becomes a question of, well, at what point do you, for survival, do you make a different decision? And I can think of, you know, it just is too complex and too complicated for me to say the government should be making this decision. That's my problem.
Yeah, I, you know, like I said, I started with, I've always been staunchly, since I was a little bitty, seriously, yeah. I was in about fifth grade having this conversation with a man. I like to look at all sides of things, and I like to look at logic, and I like to break things down. And this is a subject that I have, you know, spent a lot of time on. And I feel like I understand the other side. Number one, women have been oppressed, and a lot of that was because they had to take care of children. And they had to be pregnant, and they had to be vulnerable, and they had to be all these things. So I totally understand that side of, you know, it should be our choice whether we have to be put in these positions or put our lives. For me, I have always felt innately that there was something about life, even if it was a tiny little egg or something, and that it was just insurmountably precious and like the most important thing, more important than suffering, more important than freedom, more important than, I don't know, kind of everything. It just, I've always just had that feeling. And a lot of times the other side that talks about all these arguments that pro-life people talk about, or all the things they throw out, they're kind of like, you know, I don't know, they're kind of BS, or they're really about this or really about that. And I'm like, it's really not. It's really just like literally that simple. I probably am different than a lot of people in that I'm not for the death penalty as a super conservative person, because I look at that and I'm like, if we say that we don't have the right to take life, period, how do we have the right to take this person's life that did something wrong? It's the same thing. We're still playing God. We're still extinguishing life. And so for me, it literally is that simple. It's just, I feel like life is so precious that no one should have the choice to extinguish it. But I do understand all of the arguments as to why people think that it should be legal. I really do. I mean, I've seen suffering people. I deal with a lot of and help a lot of suffering people. Look, when my last child, my 9-year-old, you know, you saw the big, huge split.
Yeah, I did. That was not on the schedule.
It was not. And when I found out that I was pregnant,
when you were 18, that wasn't on the schedule.
It was not. Neither was the, look, none of my children were on the schedule, yeah, just like right. You. And they all came at very, very hard times. The 9-year-old, I literally thought about getting an abortion. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm not telling anyone. I'm just going to get an abortion. I was literally ready to do it. My life was so chaotic, and I wanted to get divorced. I was going through some awful, awful things. And I thought about it. And then I was like, I can't do it. You know, so that, just me, you know, had I been in a different right. place that week, maybe I would have, even with my belief that life is precious and shouldn't be extinguished, I might have walked through with it. So yeah, I don't know if that helps explain somebody that's on my.
I think one of the challenges that we as a country have is that there's sort of people are living on a continuum. And in our political sphere, you're either or and not any, you don't see all of these shades of, yeah, I'm here, but this is just the line I can't cross, you know, it's right. My line's right here and your line's right here, but we're kind of much closer on the continuum than it sounds like when we're.
Yes. And I think too, what we do that is very problematic, and I'm guilty of it in my life many, many times, but I'm trying. I feel like I have changed with it and I'm even trying to change, but is that holding a view of the opposing side mm-hmm. as like evil or wrong or something to that effect. Because that causes big problems.
Yeah.
Not wrong. I mean, because we can think something's wrong, but you know, just that they're bad and evil and they mean no good. And, yeah. And it's almost the exact opposite, whatever their viewpoint is coming from. It has to do with, like you said, that that's what they think is the good and how, what will help and what will cause goodness. So, yeah.
So there's this last question that's up there that I would love to know what your hopes are and or fears for our country's future.
Oh, that's a good one. And I would love to do the, does anything on your own political side make you uncomfortable? I think that's a really good one too.
Yeah.
Because we put each other in boxes so much. What are my hopes and fears for our future? My fear is that we just continue to go be divided and it gets worse and worse. The divide becomes worse and worse, and we become obstinate and seared in our consciences and somehow can't find our way back to connecting with one another. That scares me. I sort of have Orwellian view of the world right now. So that scares me too, honestly, like the twisting of truth and reality, which you hear from both sides. It's like we're saying the exact same thing when I listen. I'll switch the radio from Fox to CNN. And I'm like, they're literally saying the exact same things, but insert different people and different issues. I mean, it's almost the exact. But so I have the fear of that we won't have courageous people that will stand up and stop the twisting of things. And I fear the upcoming election that there's going to be madness and chaos once again. If Trump gets on the ballot, of course, I would prefer him even to what we have now, which, you know, people might think is nuts, but I still fear it. I still fear it coming. So I just fear, division. I fear ugliness.
Mm-hmm.
What do you, and hopes, I hope that everybody can just start to come back together. I hope that more people can do this and learn to just love one another, because I feel like regardless of what somebody believes, we should be able to love them and understand them. I think it's possible in all cases with work. Work on self is the main way to do that. So anyway, what are your hopes and fears?
When I think of, when when I talk or think or act on my Christian belief, it comes down to love God and love your neighbor as yourself. And if I could write the school rules, I wouldn't put the Ten Commandments on the wall. That's what I would put on the wall.
Yeah.
And it takes a tremendous amount of attention and energy and effort for me to do that.
Yes.
But it's very easy to put people in boxes and say, oh, she's one of those, he's one of those. Well, yeah, I fear chaos. She held up her hand for some kind of time, but it was 10 minutes. Oh, good. More than I thought. Mm-hmm. I will add on to this my fear of AI and how we are subject to distorted information that yes. AI can just play with people's heads in dangerous kinds of ways. So that, you know, you can't, and I guess, was it George Orwell that did talk about how up is down and down is up, and to a point that nobody knows anything or knows what they don't know. I watched The Queen on Netflix for the first couple of two or three seasons. I don't know how many seasons they've been. But the last season, you know, I read about how they were, a lot of this was fabricated. And so I thought, well, you know, if that's true and I can't tell what is and what isn't, what's fabricated and what's not, there's really no point in me watching it anymore.
Yeah.
And I think with social media and with media and my, I have a 14-year-old grandson who I think is terribly vulnerable as a person who plays a lot of video games and clicks on this because it was interesting. And so then the algorithm says, oh, you like that? Well, have this one. And has ways of digging into his brain that I can't reach.
Yes.
So I have no idea how we strengthen ourselves in the face of that.
Yeah. I have similar fears with social media and children and a generation's brains getting destroyed by the addiction to social media. So,
and your 9-year-old is a boy or a girl?
A boy.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I was very, very staunch with my 19-year-old, who's 19-year-old, that he wasn't allowed to have a phone until he could basically afford it. And I was told many times that I was ruining his social life.
Absolutely.
But I'm going to do it again. I'm going to ruin another one's social life because I just.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do have hope. I do have hope that things can change. So I think we only have maybe 5 minutes, but I am interested about this one. I don't know if it's good to have another question. We were sort of doing good wrapping up, but are there things that make you uncomfortable about your own sort of political side?
It's probably what makes me uncomfortable about both political sides, but I will say that my political side is quick to write off people that they don't agree with and to name call, you know, and to say, well, you know, obviously they are just ignorant, whatever. And I resent it and I resist it when I can, you know, that there are reasons and that we're better off if we start thinking about why does someone think that, than to paint this, you know,
yes,
paint them out of the picture, because obviously they know nothing. That part is very uncomfortable for me.
Yeah, well, along those lines, I'm uncomfortable with the ignorant sect of my political side. No, I don't like extremism of any kind. So people that use sort of patriotism and the Bible to be, or conservatism, those things sort of go hand in hand with conservative views. I don't like it when they use those things to be hateful and ignorant. And I think it probably would be both sides too, but just the non-thinking, like you said, you just sum up that this is what this person thinks or believes. Yeah. And it might not be the case. It's like stand by your man, kind of the song, put it in a political realm. You don't just stand by people because right. they are what you want them to be, or you think that they are what you want them to be or something. I don't know if that makes sense, but yeah,
it's easy. It's easiest, I think, to put people in a box there. We don't have to think about what they're thinking or what their opinion might be that might actually open up my own thinking, because
yes,
there I've dealt with that.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people's political views come from like what we've talked about, what made their life, and things can be triggering. Things can be triggering. And I think a lot of people place anger, or they sort of project anger where there's an easy fight from things that have to do with other things in their lives. And so politics is an easy place to fight, or an easy place to put up a fight.
I would love to hear more about that.
Yes.
Do I get to hear more about that? Do we have a minute?
Let's go. What another minute on that. And then I just posted one last question.
Okay. Yeah. So I deal with a lot of people who are addicted and who are struggling and have a lot of bad relationships and stuff in my North Star group in at church. And I've just dealt a lot with myself and with things. And I have found that it's just a thing that happens. Some of the political activists and the people that are the strongest and the most, what, you know, fervent, I find that their anger is misplaced. I find that a lot of them have had lives where they couldn't fight, or they didn't have a voice, or where they were not brave enough, or they faced too much rejection or abandonment to have the fight there. And so when they find a place that they can fight, and while it may be justified, completely justified in the things that they're fighting for, and it's purposeful, it becomes distorted, or it becomes almost destructive, because they're projecting that stuff, or they're fighting really for an old fight that's inside of them or something. I don't know. And so Because people have to get that out. I don't know. I don't know if it makes sense, but.
I'm going to say this, but I don't think that's what you're saying at all. What I'm going to say that I'm thinking you're thinking is not what you're going to think at all. and that is, to some extent, it gives people a place to belong. That I can belong with these people, and if we have a common enemy, then
yes. And fighting. I have a friend who has a transgender, my daughter who's gay, she also went through a transgender thing. And then she sort of kind of backed off of it or whatever. But I have a friend at church who has a trans daughter. It's a boy who transitioned to a girl.
Right.
And then another daughter that's gay. And she is obsessed with the fight and the advocacy. Now I get it. Like, I get it, but just obsessed. And you can't just get off and have a normal, where are you? Where are you as a person? Can you just be here for the non-activist you? Can you just be here for a minute? And I have found that she's fighting that fight. It's like living vicariously through your child. Okay. Yeah. Same thing that some parents do in sports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I found that her fight, I don't think is so much about those girls or even the issue. I think it's more about being a fighter. Now, I'm not saying that's for everyone at all, but I find that is taking place in people's like vitriol, that it's not about the thing. There's some other stuff involved here. As it almost is with everything. There's pain, there's life experiences, there's triggers. You know, we can't talk about it because we don't have enough time, but just in your bio and in your things, you've dealt with a lot of death.
Mm-hmm.
And like that kind of thing shapes a person.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know how, but because I haven't been through it.
Right.
But I'd love to know in the future or something.
Okay. Yeah. It would be another conversation. Yeah. They'll sign us up for another hour. We can talk more.
So what's something that you will take from this experience?
This understanding of us on a continuum, that for instance, you're talking about having a gay child, is so you're not over here on the end of this. And so we are more here than here. I'm not sure that made any sense.
No, it does. But we think so linearly and we think so black and white, I think, as people. I still think that, I mean, in this day and age, it's nuts to even say it, but I don't think that like homosexuality is what God intended for our lives, because we're like male, female, and we fit together. But that doesn't mean that I don't love my daughter and I won't 100% her, like support her life. I loved her wife. They lived with me. I wasn't for a minute ever going to harm her. But yet I didn't necessarily agree with her lifestyle. So we look a lot different than we think we look. Something that I'm going to take away from this experience is, I mean, I'm sort of thankful for, just getting to see your perspective. I really appreciate the fact that you went through the civil rights, thing and how your parents, racism shaped you. Cause I don't think too much about that in a lot of people walking around. And then a lot of people like you who might have raised your children with that same experience. So that's a depth I feel like that I need to keep in mind. Yeah.